Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It's the Q&A episode for January of 2017. I'm Y-Rot, here alongside Rolo T. How's it going, man?
It's going, Nick. Our first Q&A in a new era.
A new era. In the WMR.
This is the ruthless aggression era of WMR. And then I pause.
We're not gonna regret calling it an era at some point.
We're not gonna make it sound old as shit at all.
Nope. It's like the new era.
And this
the
is
the new generation. And people are gonna be like, what the fuck are you guys talking about?
And this is gonna be where like some new John Cena like host comes, like walks into our room in a pair of spandex like shorts and a shitty haircut. It just beats
what
the
makes
shit
you
out
think
of me.
You can hang. What makes you think you can podcast with us? Ruthless aggression.
It's like, wow, you guys are really marrying yourself to kind of just an average fucking like phrase. I certainly didn't hear ruthless aggression. I was like, oh man, that sounds intense.
It's a very
How often is there ruthful aggression or anything like that? Like, usually when you're aggressive, you're like, well, I'm gonna pull back some punches on this.
It's a random woman named Ruth.
I hate all of y'all.
Emphasizing ruthless aggression, honestly, was very, like, it was almost like a Japanese wrestling concept, too. It's like, what makes your wrestler special? Fighting spirit!
Yeah, it is true. It kind of sounds like something like a Bullet Club or whatever in Japan would be like, what makes you guys special? Ruthless aggression!
Ruthless aggression!
Yeah, there you go. It sounds a little less racist when you do it for some reason.
Like, I mean...
Look. They're like, well, Nick didn't do a fucking 18-hour Let's Play as Furious Me, so he has a little bit of leeway.
I have a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt that I haven't quite... tested people's patience as much as you yet.
Yeah. So yeah, we're in our Q&A, guys, so couple things to do off the start. Of course, we take questions from you guys, we answer them, but something we also do is we ask you guys questions. So one last piece of cleaning up in December, we got a couple Q&As, or answers rather, from the question we posed back in December, which was, if you could be a Secret Santa for any Shonen Jump character, any manga character, who would you want to be Secret Santa for, and what would you get them? What would you surprise them with? So we got a couple answers here. One from Lou Ramayashi said, I'd be the Secret Santa for Bobo, and I'd give him a year's supply of hot pepper flavored artificial gelatin that he wouldn't be allergic to, which is something within, I guess, the series itself. He tried to enter a Christmas giveaway once to get it, then realized he filled out the form in hiragana instead of kanji. So he's like, I guess I just lose that.
I mean, how many people... Wouldn't you just put bo, like, a whole bunch of times anyway, though?
I don't know how the two, like, written forms work against one another, so...
Maybe they're real sticklers, and they're like, if you don't know your kanji...
Yeah, they're like, listen here, dumbass. One here from Michael Hurdy says, if I could be a Secret Santa to any manga character, it'd be Sanji from One Piece, and I would try to find him an actually nice girlfriend who doesn't turn out to be secretly evil and awful, and to make sure she's on the up and up, I'd ask Chris for help.
I mean, you do have a good track record of that.
I'm one for one in tearing down Sanji's girlfriends as secretly
before they can actually betray him.
Yeah, exactly. And last one here, I don't have the name here, but
so much of the logic though was Sanji can't be happy though.
Yeah, come on.
Essentially,
from I Am Brandy, who says, I would give Goku and I would show him Cece's pizza. For Natsu, I'd give him a heating stark. He needs scarf, and for Deku, a Richard Simmons workout DVD.
Deku's dancing to the oil. He's like, thank you?
He's like, what I always wanted? So, very good answers to that, guys. We'll have a question for you guys. I guess actually we can just start with that. So if you want to send in an answer for this one, just shoot it over to the email, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Just put answer somewhere in your title. And our question for you guys this month is, what manga character do you hope has a breakout year in 2017?
That's a good question.
What character do you want to see have one? Do you think is going to have one? Just go in and just let us know. Shoot your thoughts over weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com and just put answer somewhere in the title. All right. And then we have a question for each other, correct?
Yes.
That's how this whole song and dance goes.
I'm not singing.
Okay. Well, that's going to be rough because I was like, Nick, sing your favorite song? I was like, I realized originally it was a command, but at the last moment I twisted it.
Will you sing your favorite song for me, please? my question for you, this is going to be a bit of a weird one. Something that I just thought of because, you know, we're in January, which in general seems to be kind of a desert for most forms of entertainment, unless you're big into, like, sports. Because we've got, you know, NFL playoffs are going on right now. Again, if you're into college with all of the important championship games and stuff.
Basketball is just heating up.
And WWE starts to finally get off its ass. So
if
I
you're
guess
into things Meryl Streep does not consider art, then you're all over January.
Did she, like, explicitly name those things?
Yeah, she was like, you know, had that big speech where she was just like, and if you would get rid of all the foreigners, there'll be no one to film these movies, and all you'll be left is with football and MMA, and those are not the arts. And I'm like, look, I'm all with you on this.
If you didn't say WWE.
She's like, that's even worse. I was like, actually, it's even closer.
It really is.
That's at least scripted.
It's scripted, yes. So my question for you is, what are your favorite entertainment memories from January? Entertainment memories.
This is an interesting one. I'm trying to think what used to come back in January. I feel like there used to be shows that there was like a winter premiere that used to come out around.
There would
time.
Be a seasonal break, of course, for Christmas, and then you would get the second half starting at some point in January, usually.
I'm starting to think that Lost used to do this. I do think that Lost used to come back during like the early like year point in time, because I think it started in the fall, and then went on a little bit of break partway through, and then we got like the end of it around. The early parts of the next year. But honestly, beyond that, I can't think of anything that relates directly to it, though I'm this might be kind of tangential, but when I was very young.
Oh, no, tangential on my recap.
No, Chris, we stay on topic on this show. Tangentially, once when I was probably like 7, my mom took me downtown on New Year's Eve, downtown Harrisburg, to watch the ball drop down here. And I don't remember much about it. But I remember it being, like, very much of, like, a party atmosphere, obviously, and I got, like, a balloon hat made for me by a clown, and for whatever fucking reason, the news decided to interview me. And they were like, hey, how are you doing? Like, what's your name? And, like, I was actually on live television, and the only things they asked me basically were like, well, hey, what's your name? Where'd you get that cool hat? And I'm like, from the clown there? They're like, do you like school? No. Well, that's all we have. This kid's dead in the water. Back to you.
Do you like school? What kind of question is that to ask of a child?
I don't know. It's fucking central PA sensibilities that, like, he doesn't like school, but he's going to be respectful and say he does. I'm like, school sucks ass! They're like, oh.
You're a good Catholic boy. We know that you'll say you like school.
Oh, yeah. All the nuns at my school had to be, like, spitting out their coffee. Like, what? All of my teachers are Wilhelm Emily.
They're all suddenly super posh. We're not allowed to beat you anymore, so.
Oh no, they made it very clear they still were. Quite a few of my teachers reveled in sharing that fact with us over and over again. They're like, you know, we could still beat you if you wanted to. We just don't.
It's like, Chris stands up and he's like already over 6 feet tall.
I was a tall fourth grader. You're thinking it made me more popular with women, but no, I'm hideously socially awkward.
Oh, God, yeah, question for me?
Yeah, oh, well, I thought you had maybe something to share on that.
Oh, my favorite January, I guess, entertainment memory is the year the Bucks won the Super Bowl.
Oh, fuck, why didn't I just mention
Yeah, you've had two of those in the last 10 years.
That is honestly one of my favorite memories that I think I'm probably just going to have in life, period, is being able to actually watch the second Super Bowl I got to watch live with my dad.
Yeah, the first one I know you had to work.
Yeah, that sucked. Though that's almost a memory in and of itself.
It's a story you can tell. It's like, yeah, I missed like the greatest game ever because of fucking work. Well, and
I got to see the touchdown pass to Plaxico Burress live.
I mean,
I didn't get to see the helmet catch live, unfortunately, but.
That drive is, of course, the best part of it. But honestly, like, in terms of football watching memories, that is one of my, I mean, because that was my first year of college. And so I went to hang out on my friend's dorm floor. And a whole bunch of us were gathered in the common room. And, you know, some of us, I brought some chili from home and we had snacks and stuff. And we were just, you know, having a good time watching the game. And it was, you know, the fucking perfect game to watch in that kind of environment. People going absolutely nuts during that final drive when we realized Tyree had made the catch.
Yeah, I didn't get to see that Tyreek.
Also, there was one Patriots fan on the floor who literally, like, his door was right next to us, and he decided to watch it in his room instead, and we could hear him.
Like, it was like, fuck! God damn it, Ashanti Samuel!
Well, we could hear him. We could hear him at various points going "yeah" to himself during not particularly exciting moments that were good for the Patriots, and we're like, "Yep, okay, still watching."
Yeah, no, there is a lot of good memories, but I don't want to drag down the Q&A by going through all of my junk.
No, we have a lot of questions to get through.
So I'll make my question relatively quick then. This is something I actually saw online. I kind of wanted to tweet it, like, what the answer was, but I didn't have, like, the time to do it. But I saw someone say, like, what's the first big, like, social event you remember as a kid, like, major news event that you can remember being, like, discussed and that you have, like, a very clear memory of?
I did actually answer this on Twitter, but I'll go ahead and say here. The first major news story that I remember living through would be the 2000 election, in particular because, you know, I'm from Florida, and we had that recount that made everyone mock us for 17 years and counting. So there's that. I think that
man took bath salts and devoured another man's face in Florida, yet the fucking recount is still the major thing people are like, Florida!
You guys can't hold up. I'm sorry. We've got all these young people who are being born here, and we've got all these old people moving here. What do you want?
It's a very conflicting area.
We're super white, except for the places that the Hispanic people have migrated to. I'm sorry. Beyond that, I did have a joke answer as well, which was the first story I remember was the controversy over the Pokemon trading card game. Like, do you remember that? There were people who thought that, like, gambling was going on in schools because we had trading cards.
I can vividly remember a church bulletin during that time that mentioned Pokemon was an act of Satan. Well, not specifically an act of Satan, but that it led to vices and sin and should be avoided. And it became, like, a thing in our school that once a fad came around, it was cool with the school for a period of time before finally teachers like stepped in and were like, no more. So it happened with that with Pokemon cards.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy Bones was the same way.
Wow.
I don't think they ever stopped yo-yos. That kind of just died on its own. But anytime something like that happened, if yo-yo like was popular, it would have happened with that too. But it didn't.
The thing about Pokemon was it was so popular that, yeah, they ended up in really strictly enforcing rules that were already in place. Like, you know, the youth sports supposed to, like, bring video games to school. And it wasn't so much of an issue when people were just, you know, like, bringing their game gear to play Mortal Kombat or whatever. But when everyone wanted to bring their Game Boy in order to play Pokemon, that was when they were like, okay, we have to crack down on this. Stop bringing your Pokemon stuff to class, please.
I remember once, and again, tangent, but when Crazy Bones was really big, I was playing a game of Crazy Bones with a kid, another classmate of mine. And if you don't know what Crazy Bones is, because you're...
It's the stupidest thing!
It was essentially, there were tiny plastic things.
Okay, everything that was made to sell as collectible hunks of plastic in the 90s was stupid, and there were a lot of them.
They were essentially just, like, marbles, but with designs and, like, designs
and awkward figures. Shapes, yeah.
So you fucking, like, you were supposed to, like, flick them at one another, like, against the surface, and if you knocked your opponent's crazy bone out, or, you know, however many, you won then, essentially. Mm-hmm. And there was, like, there were glitter versions of every crazy bone, and sometimes, like, metallic, so they're, like, rarer versions. I was playing against a kid in class, and we put, like, we had, like, crazy bones on opposite sides, and the teacher was like, everybody, it's time for silent reading time, so everybody read a book. And we both sat down again and kept, like, our crazy bones on the desk, and, like, playing against one another while pretending to read. I think we were the most clever fucking people in the world. Like, no one's going to know we're still playing Crazy Bones.
Clink. Clink.
Yeah, and just to keep up. And like, the teacher walks by and just grabs them off the tables like, you're done. And I was like, how did she know?
How did she see these brightly colored hunks of plastic knocking noisily around the desk?
Dead silence otherwise, these fucking Crazy Bones battery.
Clink. That's fucking hilarious.
Oh, man.
All right.
Let's get to some questions.
Yes, I will start us off. I'll just get through as many of these as we can. I don't believe that we actually have a name on... it's Shockwave72. There we go. All right. Do you guys want a competitive Yu-Gi-Oh! Card game correspondent? If so, I can offer my expertise in the area as well as a few other card games. Thank you, but I don't think that is necessary. If we decide that we are going to, for example, pick up the Arc 5 manga, I can get us through it. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Number two, before I asked who would be the end-all, be-all guest for WMR, I now have another question. What would you rather be a part of? The Shonen Jump podcast or another channel awesome producer that's not part of MAGFest?
I think he means panel.
Panel?
Like another channel awesome panel that's not part of MAGFest.
That does make sense, I think.
I mean, I'd like to do both, ideally.
Yes.
If it was, like, gun to my head, you had to do one or the other, I think it'd be really fun to be on the Shonen Jump podcast, but I, you know, that's, like, a hair difference between the two.
I feel like the panel, eventually, is probably more likely than Shonen Jump, because, like, we've got these two idiots.
That ass, there could be, Shonen Jump could be listening to this right now, Nick. He's like, yeah, these boys be doing a lot of tangents they'd be doing.
But I'd be enjoying them nonetheless.
I'm like, no, Nick, that's my Sasaki-san impersonation. That's what he sounds like, right? He's a pirate.
Oh, God. Number three is for me. I have an actual red right to left question before you bite my head off. Please hear me out. I was wondering where I can view the top 10 most satisfying deaths in manga you posted before. I can't seem to find your video on the matter. That's probably because you're looking for top 10 most satisfying deaths. It's actually a top 8. And I did actually do a quick search, and you can find it on, you know, one of the reposty YouTube accounts that, you know, has put up a lot of Blip Producers videos from when it got taken down. So make sure you search for top 8 most satisfying deaths, and you'll find it.
Campers.
Number 3 for Chris. Say you get your wish and Kitora and Gusamu end up together before the ship for the away mission leaves. I don't even know if that is a necessary clarifier. But let's say that Kitori and Osama do end up getting together. What will you actually do then?
I guess revel in it? I don't know. Like, from my knowledge, shipping...
Ha! You won't be able to write filthy fan fiction about your favorite couple if they actually get together.
Like, what's stopping me at that point?
Those fan favorite pairs in Avatar: The Last Airbender ended up happening. Oh yeah, all the fan fiction disappeared.
Yeah, they
stopped writing them.
There's no more Katara and Zuko fanfic out there, obviously.
Exactly. Once the couple is decided, then everyone must sit in respectful silence and just accept that it has happened. Mm-hmm. Neither celebrate nor wish that something else had happened.
Because all fan fiction and shippers fully support the source material by law, and will never deviate from that.
It's not like there is an incredibly popular AU for Gravity Falls called Reverse Falls that... I'm sorry, I'm going to get on a tangent.
Nick's like, I don't have enough time in this to do this.
I really, really hate it, though, because I'm not going to get into it. Number 4. I can only assume that you joke that I'm the second tropical at this point, so I'll ask one final wacky question here. I guess because... of the number of questions that Supernova sends him, or Shockwave sends him. Ah, I'm getting you all confused. Damn it. You're the second Supernova now. why challenge the Shonen Jump podcast to a wrestling match of epic proportions when you could challenge them to a duel? A master level Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel where you get a team of players from all over to aid you in taking them down. And what style would you prefer? Duelist Kingdoms Random Rules, GX's Tag Team Graduation Style, 5D's Turbo Dueling, Zexal's Roller Coaster Dual Coaster, or Arc 5's Fuel Dueling.
Roller Coaster Dual Coaster?
I haven't seen enough of Zexal to know what that is like, so I'm going to remove that from my consideration. The tag team duels in GX were... GX's tag team duels were not incredibly spectacular, honestly. I mean, people had done tag duels for a long time before them, and it wasn't like they, you know, came up with any spectacular rule variation besides. Turbo dueling, or riding dueling, whatever you want to call it, requires super advanced motorcycles, so I don't think that we could really do that. You could, I guess, you know, just play with, like, the regular rules without involving the actual motorcycles. Duelist Kingdom, it would be more of a contest of which team could bullshit more. And I'm fairly confident in our ability to do that.
Yeah, I was like, I'd rather do Duelist Kingdom so I can, like, attack
and
your
now we
cards
attack
and
your spit. Yeah, we attack the moon. Arc 5's Field Dueling, is interesting. That would be interesting to see, you know, a group of, you know, manga nerds running around trying to pick up cards from ridiculous holographic obstacles. I'm not confident in either side's ability to actually participate fully in that, though.
I'm pretty dope at spoons, though, so we got that on our side.
I think we would go with Duelist Kingdom. It would be the easiest to bullshit.
Yeah. All right. We got a couple questions here from Yid, who says, "Hey, hey, hey, to Chris, go, go, Rolo T, and it's your boy, Y Ruler Time."
Says, oh, God.
"First off, I just read Spirit Circle, a manga reviewed back in 2015. Did you know it's completed now? And if you do, have you gone back to read it?"
Yes.
All right. I have not. Did you like it?
It was interesting. Even if you had, like, not read any of the rest of it, you could definitely tell that it was written by the Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer guy. I'll just put it that way.
Oh, okay. Sweet. Mm-hmm. Secondly, with my newfound World Trigger obsession, I've recently purchased all the print volumes and I couldn't be happier. Well, thanks for picking those up.
Great.
My question is thus. Back in the Africa Tora invasion arc, Hyrene says, "I would have liked to have captured you," referring to Izumi, "and add you to my team. For some reason, this line gives me the chills. How do you think the Meiden soldier system in a neighborhood actually works? Mind control, conditioning, blackmail?"
I would expect that it is probably a combination of different techniques. When you consider, you know, when we know about, like, the Black Triggers, but also, you know, then there are just, you know, kingdoms that are subservient to Meiden, to Ahtoka Tora. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that that's something that we're going to find out, and it's probably going to be a big thing when it happens.
Yeah, I don't think we know enough details quite yet. I assume it's probably... the closest thing would be some version of conditioning or something like that, mm-hmm. but I don't know. We're kind of missing a couple details on it. We haven't seen anybody actually from another world. You know, the only invasions that have happened have been people from Africa Tor and Galapoa, so we shall see.
Yes.
Thank you for the questions, Ed.
All right. This one is not signed. Oh, dear, why am I always...
The Great Rhapsode.
"Dear, why am I always getting Pop-Tart crumbs stuck in my beard, Ruler of Time, and Rolo Osamu Executora T? Am I always getting Pop-Tart crumbs stuck in my beard?"
Probably, right?
Why did you guys tell me?
That's what I'm doing all the time, Nick. I'm, like, shoving my beard. I'm like, Nick!
Look, Nick! Yep, that's your beard, Chris.
Hi-ya!
"Question for both of you, although mainly for Chris, someone who is a Red Rave Master. I found it strange that Hiro had decided on the final pairing of Haru and Ellie early on, yet still decided on adding other female characters, such as Celia and Belnica, who show romantic interest in Haru near the midway and end of the story, whereas with Fairy Tail, Hiro had not originally intended for Natsu and Lucy to be a final pair, yet didn't push multiple love interests on Natsu, even though things such as interactions with Lucy, childhood with Lisanna, and great acts in Tower of Heaven with Urza could be interpreted as romantic, but weren't. In short, were you surprised that Fairy Tail never tried to force a harem on Natsu, even though it easily could have?"
I suppose I'm a little bit surprised, but I also don't think that was the intention that Hiro originally went for with Fairy Tail. I think he was maybe playing into the idea that it was going to be Natsu and Lucy, and that it, maybe there was going to be like a long lost kind of love that he had with Lasana, but because she was dead, it couldn't be like lost feelings. And then eventually he was like, well, fuck it. The series just, I fan service everything to the happiest possible ending. And at that point, too much had already been kind of put away. So he couldn't really just change everything at that point. So it was sort of like, nah, I'm just going to move everybody into kind of like their pairings. Cause that also kind of helps to achieve the best possible ending for everyone.
More questions. Chris, if you had to give a JoJo stand to every main character in the series you discuss, what would they be?
I feel like I did.
I think we've done some variation of this question before.
I'll just do a couple then. Well, I guess Soma, the only possibility could be Pearl Jam, because it's the only food-based stand. Although I don't know if it really fits his style, but I'll give that one to him. I think Emma could probably do some stuff with, like, Moody Blues, or even Whitesnake, I think she could get some use out of, being able to read other people's minds. I'm gonna give Survivor to, Asta, or no, actually to Natsu, because the only thing he likes is fighting, and that's all Survivor does, is just make people around you horrifically violent, so I feel like it'd be like a dream for Natsu. And, Luffy, I'll give the Spice Girl to, because I'm just going to foreshadow the fact that eventually he's going to get an awakened devil fruit, and he'll be able to turn the rest of the world into rubber along with him. So that's just getting ahead of the curve.
Okay. Nick, as we know, your hatred of Asta knows no bounds. Okay, it knows bounds. Let's not get crazy. But it got me thinking of another character that once brought out that emotion in you a while ago, Ryoma Etchison. Nick, how do you think your life would be affected if these two were your roommates at the same time? To be honest, I think that that Edgison and I would actually probably get along well as roommates, because he's so goddamn quiet all the time.
And perfect. And, so, like, you wouldn't have to deal with, like, his shit. Yeah.
I mean, he can be lazy, if I remember, when it comes to things other than tennis, but as long as he fucking cleans his goddamn space, or at least keeps his mess to his room, then we're cool.
Yeah.
Asta would be the really frustrating one, because he would be like constantly loudly exercising and just shouting about random things. I don't think we would work out. And
you couldn't ignore him.
No. And I would probably try to call roommate meetings and be like, Asta, come on, we both think that you're causing too much noise. And Etchison would be like, eh. Like, God damn it. another question is, who would be the Mark Wahlberg of each series you review? Okay, you can't have multiple Mark Wahlbergs.
Yeah, I don't even know what the Mark Wahlberg of each series is. Is there even a Mark Wahlberg in One Piece? I just made Baron Tamago into him because I was like, I think it'd be funny if Mark Wahlberg's this dude who has to clearly pronounce fancy words, and he's just like, oh, it's a rapier.
So we're just going to leave that question unanswered. It's diminishing returns if you give the same voice to multiple people. Final question. Recently, I reread Bakuman, and when I first read the series, the introduction of Aokiko left a horrible first impression. Throughout the series, even as she developed, still left a bitter taste in my mouth due to her first initial chapters. Have the two of you ever had a character upon introduction leave a bad impression, and even throughout the story, while developing nicely, it still isn't satisfying thanks to that initial impression? Interesting question. Basically, inability to look beyond that first impression. And honestly, I think that sometimes we can be a little bit set in our ways, set in our patterns of thought on a series. It's definitely a habit that I think that we've gotten a little bit better about over time.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
We all still have them. Yeah. To go back, I still, like, going back, I think I'm a little bit lower on the Koichi from Part 4 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Solely just because I always found, like, not little kids, because he's actually the same age as Josuke, he's just tiny, but I just found him, like, to be annoying. And even though he's a character that does grow a lot and probably has some of the most development of a JoJo character, period, I still have never been particularly fond of his parts in that, and that's probably just, like, a thing where I'm like, eh, just that archetype I don't care for or whatever, but yeah, no, I'm sure there are more instances out there. I've just none that distinctly popped to mind of, like, I hated them at the start, and now, even though they're clearly better. I still am just being.
Yeah, it's hard to answer that for me, honestly. I feel like most of the series that if I really dislike a character at first, then I will have stopped reading before they can actually develop into something better. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think on the show we've had instances where we hated a character initially and we've come around on them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Asta will be that, though.
It's
tough for us to be won over completely by him.
Well, you know, like Yuma was one that we were just like, oh, God, yeah. This guy.
Oh, and yeah. Then, hey,
he actually did develop out of that, so.
All right. Well, thank you for those questions. Mm-hmm. We got some here from Matt. Says, Dear Y Ruler of Thyme and Chris.
It's Thyme, Chris.
I know. I just wanted to pronounce the TH. How often did he get to? And Chris, Ruler of Honey Mustard. Also, I'm also a ruler. Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
My question is a non-manga question. Well, I guess we can answer it then. Nick.
Oh, bye.
On the rare occasions you do go drinking.
End the show.
What kinds of alcohol drinks do you like?
My connection is kind of fucked up right now.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Am I coming through okay?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay. Dude, it was just a bit of a hiccup there. I drink so rarely that I don't even have alcoholic drinks that I like. So,
Yeah, that was one of, like, your first, like, not first, but, like, it was a rare occurrence for you to actually get something with alcohol in it when we went out in Tampa.
Yeah, we went out in St. Petersburg, and I had one, what was it, Angry Orchard?
Yeah.
And that, like, one. And yeah, you guys were getting shots and refilling your beers, and I was just kind of like slowly nursing.
Nick was getting his degree in nursing.
I'll go ahead and tell you guys, one of the reasons that I don't drink is that I'm deathly afraid of finding out what I'm like when I'm tipsy or drunk. I mean, I have no idea what side of me is going to come out if I get sloshed, and I have no intention of ever finding out. So whenever I drink, I will do it on special occasions, and I will always make sure that it is way, way, way below my limit.
Hmm. I can take it.
I don't have, I mean, like, if you want to give me alcohol, then it should be something that probably doesn't have much alcohol in it, because,
it's for it currently. Probably needs another flavor to it too, because I don't think you like straight alcohol of any kind.
No, I've had
like a beer would probably need to be one that has like an apple orchard that has apple flavor in it, mm-hmm, or something like yeah. that.
I think I did before it was legal, you know, occasionally my mom would be like, "Hey, you want to try like a sip of this?" And I'd be like, "Bleh."
You like were on her dress. Bleh. She's like, "You could have just said no." And Chris, we already know you love those car bombs, so instead, what are the worst drinks you can remember trying? I haven't had a huge variety of drinks in my life, generally because once I find stuff I like, I tend to just kind of stick with them, unless someone offers me otherwise. But I have had...
That's why I still eat Pop-Tarts.
But I have had what I will go on record as being the worst thing I ever tasted in my life, which is a Michelada. It's a Mexican drink. It is a Mexican beer of some kind, so like a Corona, something like that. Tomato juice.
Ugh.
Clam juice.
Ugh.
Worcestershire sauce.
Oh, God.
Tabasco sauce.
It's just this, just a collection of random fluids that were found underneath the bar.
Basically. Lemon you
hint
put
of
in
nitroglycerin.
Yeah, like a little Drano. It is... It's essentially like a Bloody Mary, like a cheap Mexican Bloody Mary that you put clam juice into too, and it is revolting. And my dad loves them. Loves them. They're his favorite thing. I can't understand it, but it is seriously, it's beyond words how gross that fucking drink is. It is awful.
Mm.
Also, this isn't a question, but he mentions that this a suggestion for a manga review. He recommends Change 1-2-3, and I just wanted to let you know we actually did do Change 1-2-3 as one of the first series.
A long time ago.
We did it a very long time ago, but you can check out the episode. I know it's on iTunes and Podbean, and if I recall, we both actually were surprisingly like we enjoyed it.
We quite liked it. I mean, it was definitely a series that had its flaws, but I think that it might have made one of our best of lists.
Yeah, it was a pretty decent one. But yeah, it's a very early episode, so if you go back, you can find it. Thank you for the questions, Matt.
All right. Next we have from Kufokator. It's a lot of questions in this one, so I'm going to kind of speed through them.
Okay. All right.
Number one, he explains how he decided on the name Kufokator, which was Aftokrator inspired. Just switched some of the letters around and add the first two letters of his real name. So that out of the way, how did you guys come up with Y Ruler of Time and Rolo T as your nicknames? Okay.
You've answered this one, right?
I don't know.
On the I feel like we've had to have.
I will go ahead and explain that I was 14. So.
I mean, yeah. I feel like a lot of people around our age, that's what you're going to get when it's like, how did you cope with your screen name? Like,
I was a teenager.
mine is just Rolo Tomasi is the name of a character from L.A. Confidential, like a criminal you couldn't catch. So I kind of like that, and like Rolo T. But it was also because I was a really big Booker T fan at the time. So Rolo T just came off that.
And are you a bigger or not bigger Booker T fan now that he has retired and proved to be absolutely insane?
It's so much better now. First, it was originally because I was like, he's so cool and funny, and now it's like because he is amazingly awesome. It's like watching what's his name, Michael Irvin on NFL Network, where you're like,
oh yeah,
you shouldn't be on the commentary. You're insane, but god damn it, do I love it.
It's something so incredibly endearing about it. Like, people talk about how, like, Booker T was, like, one of the worst commentators of all time. No, he was not, because he was still entertaining.
He was great.
With the greatest of ease. My name comes from a previous handle that I had, which involved, like, demeaning over time, which was actually taken from a friend of mine that I would spitball a ton of the time with, and he was, like, of destiny, so I was like, I'll take time then. Yeah. And the Y comes from when I was in middle school, I was obsessed with the name Yamato because it was, there was the Yamato canon in StarCraft. And right at the same time that I learned about that, I learned about, you know, the Yamato clan in Asian history. So I was like, that's a cool name.
You dig it.
Second question. I'm a big fan of Suyu and My Hero Academia. I'm surprised at her incredible popularity despite being a supporting character. So do you guys have any characters that you love to pieces despite typically falling into the category of minor or supporting characters? And if so, then why?
It's almost everybody who I like so in many. Manga are like the minor characters. We both really like Jiro from My Hero Academia, and she hasn't done shit in that series really as of yet.
And she is also surprisingly popular.
Yeah. I have tons. Almost every series that I enjoy, I tend to have like a minor or supporting character who's like one of my favorite characters in the series. So
Yukimitsu,
Kumamura,
mm-hmm.
Elfman, like there's tons that we'd go through everyone basically. Yeah. Shino.
Second part of that question is, have you guys ever been surprised by the popularity of a supporting or minor character that you've never taken so much as a second glance at? And who do you think is the most surprising character in terms of being very popular despite their low prominence in the series?
Hitsugaya. I'm always surprised he was popular despite never really doing anything.
Hitsugaya's a weird one, but that was something that they eventually fed into, and so it kind of helped that to persist. So I do sort of get that. I remember being really surprised when early on Iruka was so incredibly popular. He's a cool character, but I mean, he stopped doing stuff, and he did hold on to a lot of his popularity even towards the end of the series. And it was just like, he's just got a scar. Next question. Do the two of you have any series outside the ones you read for the regular recap that you don't read frequently but do check in on occasion because you're curious enough about the main story? I still keep up with Hajime no Ippo.
So. For me right now, it's no. I'm hoping to get back up to date with Haikyuu eventually. I just haven't picked it back up since the volumes came out. But honestly, I don't. Like, because the only way I really read manga now is basically when we're doing it for the podcast. So... there aren't too many. Although I will say, we got through Welcome to the Ballroom, and I hadn't finished all of it, but I did, even after the podcast was done, I think that night actually finished like the last like 6 or 7 chapters I hadn't finished by that point.
Sweet.
And that's one I probably will keep reading when I hear new chapters are out.
Mm-hmm. It should be coming very soon. Apparently it's going to come out in like the February issue of the magazine.
Sweet.
There are also a couple that I do occasionally check in on, just kind of drop in to see how things are going, like Attack on Titan. Occasionally I'll hear, oh, the latest chapter's out, and I'll just go take a look at it, and I'll be like, I haven't been reading this, so I'm completely free of context. I also checked out The End of a Comic Got Killed. It didn't really get any better, but it does end on a surprisingly bittersweet note. That honestly would have been probably downright fucking poetic in a series that was better all around. There are a few that I do check in. Bambino Segundo, I'll check out occasionally, but it hasn't been updated in a while. Next question. Assuming that My Hero hasn't already answered this question by the time you guys read this email, as we all know, there is a traitor among the UA class. Well, we don't know that for sure. It's just a suspicion. Popular consensus among fans right now is that Kaminari is the traitor. I personally hope it's Minato, because I fucking hate that guy. I want to see Deku go one for all on his face. Who do you guys think is the traitor in the class?
I made my prediction. It's Pip-Boy from this most recent chapter.
If it has to be someone from 1A, I am going to stick with my prediction of Hagakure. But if you actually look up the theories on Kaminari, and there are some interesting ideas that people have, like that his ability can apparently be used to block communications and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a possibility. But I think that it's possible that people read too much into an old design of his that Horikoshi had, where he was an out-and-out villain. And you gotta take that with a grain of salt, because there are also a bunch of other characters that he changed significantly before actually publishing the series. Like, Deku is very different than he started out as, and Bakugo is. So.
Yeah.
Anyway. We all know you guys aren't big fans of anime-related material and prefer the manga. However, what do you guys feel about the anime material that the series creator either has a direct hand in, or projects that the series creator has confirmed to be canon, such as the Strong World One Piece movie?
Well, I don't know if the Strong World movie is considered canon so much as the characters in it, because there's specifically like a whole chapter, like a side chapter of One Piece dedicated to showing Shiki, Gold Lion Shiki, I think his name is. I don't know if, because they don't reference it within the world of One Piece, the manga, though. So it's not as though people...
that they went on.
Yeah, no, nobody's like, hey, remember that time we flew up to an island in the sky with, like, an airships and, like, we were all mobsters for a little bit? Like, it introduces that it exists within it, but it's, you know, nothing that plays into the series following that.
I don't think it's a guarantor of quality, personally, because, I mean... There are so many different anime, you know, exclusive things that the creator has had an involvement in. And so many that there has been no original creator involvement in that have been really good.
Mm. I do like, though, when some of those materials help to expand with on the current thing. Like, there is a movie in One Piece that's set right before Water 7 or so. And the fight Luffy has with the villain suggests that's where he got the idea for Gear 2. Like, something happens to kind of suggest, like, he, like, bounces off of something. He's like, that just gave me an idea or something like that. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. But, I'm fine with them. It's just usually those things, because they're never going to be brought up in the manga again itself, it's kind of like, eh, I mean, if you enjoy it. But then, of course, you get the things like Black Clover. It's like, hey, did you guys read that light novel? Like, what the fuck? No! That's when I don't like it. Because then it's like, look, I didn't read the light novel. Or, hey, I didn't fucking watch Strong World. Why do I have to, like, is it enough that I'm reading this?
God. All right, next question. At some point later on in the future, would you guys be willing to review the Dragon Ball manga?
Absolutely.
We do have Dragon Ball Super as one of the suggested manga for us to do, add to our regular lineup. But, I mean, if you're talking about the original Dragon Ball one, we could very well end up doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Off the table. Chris, since you and Nick are currently reading through all of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure right now, I was wondering, are you still currently reading the current part of the series? It is out now.
Jojo Leon, no. I haven't read it in quite some time, and I honestly remember very few details about it. But once we, you know, whenever we get to it, if we do, then yes, I will read through it then at that point. But it was just one of those things I stopped reading, you know, essentially once we moved everything over.
When you guys read a recommendation, do you actually go out and buy the Volumes for each series in order to read it? I can't really imagine you guys buying, for instance, volumes of Akisora to read for recommendation. Also, what about series that can't get a Western release? Do you have to read the Scanlations at that point?
For a series that has absolutely no way for you to read it in any, like, format, like, legally in America, then yeah, then you have to rely on Scanlations. There's no other way to even know what they're talking about. But for any series that has, like, an official release, I definitely pick up a couple volumes of it at least to, you know, help out. But obviously we can't do that with every series. Like, it'd be financially impossible for us to do recommendations if we both had to spend, like, $200 on a series every couple weeks or whatever to pick up all.
Even digitally, there are some where it really does add up. So. We do definitely contribute where we can. I mean, you in particular have gotten a lot of physical volumes for stuff, for certain releases, which is great when you are watching the video for the episode because he'll highlight a page and then show it off to the camera.
Yeah.
But yeah, for something like, I mean, obviously, like, Akisora would never fucking come over here. Stuff that is like a webtoon, a Korean webtoon, I mean, that's a webcomic that has been translated. It's not exactly going to get a collected English release 99.9% of the time. So.
And part of the hope, too, in Scanlation, I don't support the Scanlation industry per se, but whenever there's a series that has no official release, there is the hope that if it can gain popularity, can give it a reason to. Now, again, this is not an endorsement of Scanlations at all, but just the fact that it can garner some knowledge of the series that otherwise may not exist. You know, hopefully if it then becomes popular and goes over, then the Scanlations can be like, hey, you know, no need for us anymore. Time to ride off into that sunset.
Which unfortunately is not the approach that they tend to take.
No.
Instead, there are a lot of them that have a pretty big stick up their ass about, like, oh, but we're so much better and we do it for free. You're not better.
But, it's generally how it kind of has to work.
And last question. How much money would I have to pay you to on Patreon to make you guys review anime?
I don't know. Maybe we'll make that a later on goal.
It's an idea to consider.
All right, a couple questions here from Sig. He says, hey, Chris and Nick, if you could take one character group from one manga currently in a recap to have their own short spin-off, who would you pick?
I like how he considers 4 to 8 volumes a short spin-off. That's a year publication, generally.
But, hey, it is like a shorter kind of, I guess, story.
Let's see.
I kind of like the idea of Arashiyama Squad getting their own spinoff. I feel like there's a lot of potential to do within that group, like humor and development you could do, and kind of show what they've been like prior to, I guess, the entire events of the series starting when they were just kind of like slowly becoming the most popular thing.
I feel like it'd be good if we had, honestly, some more Naruto spinoffs, honestly. There are already, you know, it seems basically the franchise is exclusively spin-offs now, aside from the anime.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there are some very popular characters that never really got to do very much. That's the nice thing about, you know, the Rock Lee manga is that, he's like, hey, there's this popular character that doesn't really get to do much in the main series, and he's got his own series going on. It's a nice acknowledgement of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, you know, say, like, one focusing on Shikamaru's group. That'd be kind of cool to follow. Or he gives Hinata and Shino and Kiba something to do. We're going to search for Sasuke. Okay, let's go home.
Yeah, it's like, guys, remember that sweet time they went to go find Sasuke and they found Tobi and then went home?
And Shino was like, I have to do really well this time. Oh, okay.
God, that fucking sucked. Second question. If you could pick one canceled manga or one on infinite hiatus to resume as an ongoing series for at least 150 chapters, which one would you choose?
Go ahead.
I would like to see Cross Manage come back. I think it'd be really fun to see that come back for 150 chapters. Obviously not at the point it ended. Like, it'd be nice to get, like, you know, not like, hey, what are they doing now? But like, hey, let's try to continue the story as it was before we kind of got canceled. I'd really like to see what they could have done with 150 more chapters.
I would say Busa Rankin.
Yeah.
It was a very good series that was cut short due to a combination of problems that Watsuki was having at the time. Mm-hmm. But just a really good series that was way too short. All right. Next up, we've got questions from Ninja X3I. Hey, Crick Larryman and Nis Frios. God.
I like that. I like it.
All right. As of the time that you read this question for a Q&A, what do you consider the best recommendation you have covered for the podcast? What do you consider the worst recommendation? And if a genie gave you the chance to erase the latter manga from existence along with your memories of that manga, but would also erase the former from existence, would you do it?
Well, no, the last one. I'd ever, even the worst thing, I feel like, is not worth, like, you know, it's that thing. Like, yeah, keep the memories, the good and the bad. Plus, what would be the point of, like, losing the best manga we ever got recommended just to be like, thank God, I don't remember Air Gear anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know if Air Gear is the worst. I probably hate it the most, but I think the worst recommendation we got is probably Freezing for me, just in terms of, like, something so awful that's been running for so long.
It's still going, I think.
Yeah. I don't know what the best is. It's really tough to say. There's a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, especially since we started also pulling in series we've already read before, like 20th Century Boys and things like that. I have to, like, pull that in and compare those ones. So I don't know if I could pick an absolute best. There's a lot of really good ones, though.
Oh, let's see. I mean, JoJo's is good. My Hero Academia was really good, and I mean, that was a recommendation before we actually added it, because we took a look at it before Shonen Jump English actually picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Great Teacher Onizuka was a pretty good one. I mean, there's a lot of really good ones. I have a more difficult time remembering the good ones than I do remembering the bad ones, because I mean, like, there's a pretty clear, like, Weekly Manga Recap Hall of Shame when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've got, yeah, Freezing in there, the Spider-Man manga, Usagi Drop.
Future Diary.
Basically, if Nick got very, if Nick's voice got really high-pitched during it. Oh, man. Oh, God, what was that one that was... Well, Today Love Starts, that's on there too.
Mm-hmm.
There was one that was really early on that was like a really early contender for the worst one we ever did. That one where the guy was on the island with the three girls who were throwing themselves out of it.
Cage of Eden.
No.
Oh, okay.
We didn't like that one.
Oh, yeah, no. Umi no Masaki?
Yes, yes.
There we go. Holy shit, yeah. I can't believe I remembered
that. That's an old one.
That was pretty bad.
Probably from like 2010 or something.
Wolf Guy is another one. Wolf Guy actually might be it for me. That was pretty fucking revolting, and I didn't even get to the worst shit in that. All right, thank you for the questions there. We're gonna move on.
Brought back some memories.
From Mike says, "Hey Nick and Chris, fun scenario for you guys. Some of the evil people have come together to do evil stuff. Dio Brando, All for One, Apocalypse Dragon, Gremmy, that crappy manga Spider-Man, and Blackbeard."
You don't get a villain. That crappy manga Spider-Man, that's it.
You must each assemble your own four heroes. Nick, you get Spider-Girl or Spider-Man as one, and Chris, you get Captain America. Who are the three remaining people you choose from manga that isn't Saitama, and why?
It's a very good clarifier. You can't get the one that will just end the contest immediately.
I put my group up together for this, so obviously Captain America has to be in there. Mm-hmm. I put Gohan in there because I was like, the team needs like a big, heavy like hitter essentially, and Goku's too easy. Like I feel like you put Goku in, it's like, yeah, you're probably just gonna win off that guy alone. Plus, Gohan needs a chance to shine, and you know, I figured it'd work with Cap. I put Ryu in there because I'm like, someone needs to shoot Apocalypse Dragon down. Like this just needs to be a thing. Just gotta get that out of the way. And then my last one, I put in Zoro because I was like, he's dope. Zoro is dope, and his team needed to be lit. So, Zoro was in there.
I honestly did not get around to forming my team after I looked at this question because I spent a whole bunch of time being like, well, let's see, Asta. No, wait. Hang on. Do any of these powers count as magic? And I literally was just kind of debating if his sword would work on all of them the entire time. And I ran out of time to make the team. And I was like, fuck it. Yeah. Spider-Man will drag the whole team down anyway.
Yeah, he's going to be like breaking shit up. Everyone's going to be like, Grammy, why are you? You have the power. Just imagine we win. He's like, I can't, bro. It's so hard.
I can imagine the scenario in which we win, but I can't. But I can't imagine our bodies being able to take it.
Oh, we're all monsters and explode. God damn it, Grammy. And second, what is a moment in manga that you wish you could not only relive reading for the first time again, but could also commentate on WMR? One I'd really love to be able to experience again would just be Death Note in general. Like, I think Death Note more than any was a series I had so many, like, visceral reactions to, like, actively. Like, I can remember actually my heart pounding reading through certain moments because it was so tense. Or that moment when Light's dad comes out of the TV station and an entire like police van and like blockade is there to block his face from being seen so that he could get out without being killed. That was like a moment where it's like, fuck yeah. I think that'd be like a really fun series to read on WMR. But also I really wish we had been doing WMR before the Enies Lobby arc started. So we could have like discussed the fights that happened or the moment when Luffy's like, Sage King, shoot down that flag and all that, Robin's backstory. Like that had been some good stuff to talk about.
I think Death Note would have been interesting if we had done it week to week because, I mean, the only ways I've experienced that have been, you know, going through it all the way. And I feel like that probably lost something. Doing that because, I mean, the anime had entirely come out before I watched it in a marathon, the whole thing. And then, of course, you know, the manga was entirely out as well. God. Relive reading for the first time again.
It's a good question. I always like those kind.
I Shield 21 because it's my favorite manga.
That would actually be a dope manga for us to be able to read again on the podcast.
Knowing how
hype we got just discussing it after the fact, it would be insane. Mm-hmm. Like, if we got to discuss the Ojo match, like, live.
Aisho 21 had ended before we did a weekly manga recap.
I think it had basically almost like ended by the time we started really even talking to. I think the World Cup arc was in the middle of going on, but outside of that.
To put it in perspective, the World Cup arc happened after the New York Giants won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so it wasn't too long after we knew each other.
One thing I will say is that, I do vividly remember the first time that I read, Eyeshield 21, you know, I was getting crazy into it. And, I had, you know, just been blitzing through the whole thing, pun not intended, when I got to the Hakushu match and the chapter in which Hiruma got sacked was the most recent chapter. So he gets sacked by Gao. And his arm breaks, and, you know, the last two pages of the chapter are, you know, the title page where everything is black because Hiruma's just blacked out. And then, you know, I try to go to the next page, and it's like, stay tuned for the next chapter.
Jerry Lewis, lie, Ivan!
That was the last chapter, and I had to wait, and was like, no!
Yeah, that was a tough one to have to, like, come back on, too.
It's like, you know, if you've marathoned Game of Thrones and all of a sudden you like have this, you've caught up on like episode 9 of the season was when you still where you catch up.
The Lannisters send their regards. What? Credits. Like, no! No, thank you for the question, Mike.
Yeah. Next is going to be from Lumramiyasha. Hey there, why ruler of time of my life? And Don't you forget about Rollo T.
I did that song at karaoke, and I found while I was singing it, I was basically just doing it as David Bowie, and I was like, well, this is weird.
Don't you. Number one, I've had Shonen Jump on my mind a lot recently, and I'm making a playlist of all the most iconic opening songs from every Shonen Jump anime that I could find on YouTube, and it's provided here. Thank you. One thing I noticed while listening, though, is that the playlist was how anime series gradually but surely moved away from using show-specific opening themes to using random J-pop songs that loosely fit into the show, as in a theme song that was obviously written just for the show to one that was being released, and so synergy and promotion. They decided to just use it for the show.
Yeah.
Do you not, Do you prefer opening themes that are expressly made for a show, or do you not mind so long as the show is appropriate, the song is appropriate, rather, and sounds good? I mean, that's not a guarantor of quality. It's the same thing as with, you know, the creator involvement. I do think that a lot of my favorite classic opening themes are show-specific ones, Pegasus Fantasy. That's a really, really good classic one. I think that a lot of the Dragon Ball themes obviously were made specifically for it. But there are some that I like. My favorite anime theme of all time is Last Train Atarashiyasa, which is the second Yu-Gi-Oh! 5D's opening. And that was, I think that the version that was made for the show was specifically made for it, but it was a theme. It was just, you know, a J-pop song before that.
I know there's definitely a lot that I enjoy that are specifically written for it. The JoJo stuff in particular have been like, I love the fact that as this, like the series continues, like the villains start fucking with the theme song. That's dope as shit. Which I think is awesome. But honestly, like even just a good song, like, one of my favorite anime openings is Ready, Steady, Go from, Fullmetal Alchemist. And that's, you know, wasn't written for it or anything like that.
That was a pop song.
Yeah.
That showed up in, that should have been Beatmania.
That shit was dope as fuck, man. So yeah, I like both, but yeah, when it's original, it does help add to it a little bit more.
What are your favorite and least favorite anime opening themes for a Shonen Jump series? My least favorite probably ever is Tonight, Tonight, Tonight. For Bleach. I hate that song. And I believe that the Yu-Gi-Oh! 5D's theme that I just mentioned, I believe that qualifies, so.
I think I really like Orange Range Asterix.
Orange Ranges.
Yeah, the first Bleach opening. That one's really good.
Toriko's opening theme. First one.
Yeah, Guts. That's a great
A great one.
Guts.
And that was made for it. So
yeah,
there you go.
That's a really good one. Least favorite was on there. None immediately comes to mind. You know what? Actually, this is one I don't get, and maybe it's because I didn't watch it. I don't get the Sailor Moon open. I know it's not Jump, but I don't get it. Like, the dub version, I never cared for it, and it might just
That was an early 90s Deke production, so.
Yeah, but I love most of the 90s.
People just remember that finally because of 90s nostalgia. I mean, if you listen to that again with fresh ears, I mean, the singer sounds so disinterested.
Yeah.
She is the one named Sailor.
Yeah.
I think the original Japanese one is a very beautiful goddamn song, honestly, though.
All right.
Number two, with JoJo's Part 4, Diamond is Unbreakable, recently announced to be being made into a series of live-action films directed by Takashi Miike, which aspects of Diamond is Unbreakable are you most looking forward to seeing in live-action? Which are you most skeptical? That's the word about.
There's never been a live-action adaptation of JoJo, to my knowledge, so I'm really curious how you make stands not look lame. I feel like it would require really good CGI to not be like, this is dorky as shit. I mean, my favorite parts of Part 4 are going to be kind of tough to do because it's a lot of, like, the fights he has in the middle. Like, you're never going to be able to do the Highway Star fight. Like, there's no time to, like, well, maybe you could, I guess, if you're trying to, like, pad things in the middle, but I mean, ultimately, you just had to make sure that final, like, encounter is as awesome as it is in you know, the series itself. I think that'd probably be, like, just if you nail that, that's where it all kind of comes together. But it's unfortunate you'd have to cut out a grand majority of that series because there's not honestly a lot of story-dependent stuff. It's a lot of, like, slice-of-life stand fights that are kind of used to build
slice of life stand.
It is. When you read Part 4, you'll understand 100% what I mean by that. It's that a whole large part of it is like stand fights against random people and shit in town. And it just is used to kind of build up Mardio as like this city that's almost a character in and of itself.
I do think it would be interesting just to see the ways that JoJo character designs are done in a live action film.
Mm-hmm. All the poses and everything.
Mm-hmm. And number three, I've been re-listening to old Weekly Manga Recap episodes again. In the episode Moosey 316, during the discussion of World Trigger Chapter 25, Chris remarked that if World Trigger was still running... Oh, this is the do you actually hate Jin like he predicted question.
No, no, I do not. He's not turned out to be that bad.
Mm-hmm. Alright, yeah, that's the last question in that one.
Alright, so question here from Mauricio Cuervo, aka Mark1246. It says, hey Nick and Chris, hope you're having a fantastic Halloween. Bam, nailed it.
That was sent to us in October, by the way. That was incredibly optimistic.
So after reading many volumes of any manga series, when the main character's at the lost battle, I have this weird expectation that the last fight is going to be sick, only to be either disappointed or underwhelming. Examples I have are all the JoJo final antagonist fights, except for part 4, the Naruto vs. Sasuke fight, Bleach, and the subject of the month, Ikki vs. Sora from Air Gear. So, what other manga series that you read were you let down by the final fight, and what fights did you enjoy more in the series you choose?
Aishou 21.
Aishou 21 was really disappointing. I'm actually going to argue, though, about JoJo. I mean, first and foremost, part 3's final fight is awesome.
Yeah, but Dio? That's awesome.
Fucking dope. Part 2 is dope as shit, too. I know I've been saying dope a lot, but it is. He flies a plane into a volcano while being eaten by piranhas. How is that not awesome? Part 5 even is pretty good. Like, yeah, the power and the resolution to it sucks, but it's a decent fight. And part 6 I think is awesome as well. Yeah, all the parts in JoJo are actually really good. So I disagree with that sentiment, but,
I will actually tell a short story here.
Okay.
I've had Prince of Tennis on my mind a lot because, we've been getting dangerously close to, it seems more and more like we're going to do Sadistic September this year, based on the pace that our Patreon has been going at. I'm not going to say what we'll end up doing, but it is Prince of Tennis.
I'm not going to say it's Prince of Tennis, but it's Prince of Tennis.
I mean, we did one of Chris's, and if we do one of mine, then that's the one that everyone's expecting us to do. So I've had that on my mind a lot recently. And so actually the final match in Prince of Tennis was what made me realize it was terrible. Literally, like, I was so let down by how stupid the final battle and the reveal of what the ultimate technique in tennis is was that I went back and was like, wait a minute, this has been terrible from the beginning.
Wait a minute, this was never good.
I just kind of got caught up into it. If not for Prince of Tennis, I would not be the man that I am today. Like, if that match had not been so bad, I would not have my girlfriend today. Because of the doors that opened because I started doing manga reviews because I hated Prince of Tennis so much.
So Prince of Tennis is like the Hugoku of your life. Like, it's been there.
Yes.
All right. Thank you for the question there, Mark.
All right. Next is there some... Yo-Yo. Yeah. This may be a somewhat dumb question. There are no dumb questions.
Nick, when's Right to Red, Right to Left coming back?
I've been confused about what time I need to look up to know when you guys do your podcast live, because you say Eastern Standard Time, but when I go to look that up, the sites I go to will often say around the summer that most states are not on that time, but on Eastern Daylight Time. So since you guys mentioned that Nick lives in Florida and Chris lives in Pennsylvania, I looked those up instead, and I mostly get a somewhat better result. But my question is, do you guys both live in the same time zone? And yes, we do.
Yes.
Not all of Florida is in the same time zone, but the grand majority of it is, and the part that I live in is in the same time zone as Pennsylvania.
Yep.
The thing is that, yes, we do actually switch over to EDT from EST. I really hate whenever that happens. I understand why it's necessary, because not every place in the world observes daylight savings time, and that is why they do it. But it is frustrating, because sometimes you don't know what people don't know what you're talking about when you say that. It's like, don't you mean EDT? No. Fuck you.
I'm like, there's a difference?
Fuck you, being technically correct.
All right. Questions here from, I don't see a name, but Jonah Lev, I believe. Hello, nickels are not found in trees on Ramadan. Nickels not foes trees, Ramon. Nick Freeman, and Christ, Iggy never fucked the fur and the loose air in Rio. Chris, Ig, fuck a loose air in Rio. Christopher Larios. He Hodored our names.
Yes.
Two questions.
That's dedication.
That is. I applaud that effort. Who are your three favorite characters from the manga you cover in the recap? I say three because I find picking just one to be pretty hard for me. I don't think we'll have time to do all, like, individual series because this is, there's a lot to that.
I think that he means, three from the manga overall that we do.
Oh, okay. Three characters.
From all the manga that we cover, pick three characters.
Oh, okay. I feel like it might honestly just be the three favorite characters from One Piece. Well, no, okay. It'll probably be like Usopp, Osamu, and... Yeah, then probably Sanji. So it's just two One Piece characters. I was like, it could just be all... No, I do like Osamu. He's pretty cool.
I'm gonna go with Ikoma currently.
Wow, he rose up.
He did. I think that I'm just kind of nostalgic for World Trigger at this point because I was like, when are we gonna get more?
Yeah.
There's been no updates on Ashihara's condition, unfortunately. I'll go with Zoro and Bakugo.
Okay, I can dig all those. Question two: you are both walking in a forest, and for some reason, when you find a bear. It's about to attack you, and you have to pick between Leonardo DiCaprio with the baseball bat or Gremmy. Who do you choose, and what happens?
It's Leonardo DiCaprio with a baseball bat covered in barbecue sauce. Yes,
he's holding a water balloon covered in ranch dressing. It breaks. Like you can see, like, hey Leo, I feel like you're holding that a little too tight. No, I'm not.
I think that we've established that. Well, okay. Does the person have to defend us?
I feel like if you have Gremmy, he's just going to be like, don't worry, I'll get us out of the situation. He's like, oh, shit, no.
Makes another bear.
Yeah, I was like, I imagined a second bear.
Makes another bear. It's like, oh, damn. I thought the bears would fight each other.
Makes them stronger. It's like, well, stop! Question three.
Well, I had to make the bear stronger so that it could fight the other bear and win. Don't worry, I'll make the original bear stronger to make it up. Oh, no.
Stop giving them machine guns! Question three. Same question, but the bear is Mondaymon.
I feel like I would want... I'd want Leonardo at that point, because at least he couldn't make it worse.
Well, he's going to antagonize the shit out of that bear. But after that, yeah, you know it's not going to get worse.
Well, minds of mine will either just will probably observe how aggressive DiCaprio is being and just be like, you need a hug, and then heart him. As opposed to... yes, he'd hug him and then laserize him. As opposed to Gremmy would, you know, make the hearts, you know, be filled with acid.
True. Fucking Gremmy. Thank you very much for the question, Jennifer.
The bleach may be over, but the Gremmy jokes will last forever.
That's eternal.
All right. So we've got a pair of emails from Jack Lebrano. First one, Merry Kwanzaa, veteran survivors of the Great Air Gear Raid of 2016. Okay, I've been reading into a lot of behind-the-scenes things concerning the creation of My Hero Academia. With that in mind, I have a few questions about some characters. One, do you think Horikoshi ultimately made the right decision in making these changes for various characters, or do you think there was an opportunity missed? Those differences being Deku was originally an adult accountant, Baku was originally a nice, sincere, super positive, goody two shoes protagonist who just happened to insult people by accident because he's too honest. The only reason why he made him so loudmouth, angry, exploding is because he found him to be boring and that would be more entertaining to make him absolutely despicable.
I think it was, especially with how Deku eventually turned out. I mean, if he was an accountant, I imagine he might be slightly different, but I still imagine he'd probably still be a little bit of milksop kind of character. So you kind of need, especially with like the lead two characters, you want one of them to kind of have at least some sort of edge to them. So having Bakugo have that kind of aggression where Deku was a lot more kind of, tepid in response, definitely kind of helps to balance out the series and give it a lot more energy. So yeah, I think it's a good decision there.
Chris, are you saying accountants can't be edgy? Come on, man.
I'm saying Deku isn't edgy, and I don't know if making him an adult accountant would give him any more, like, I don't know if that would give him any more ruthless aggression.
Ruthless aggression. All right, yeah, let me show you. Let me see what you got. Yeah, yeah. Let me see that chart of accounts. Yes!
I agree, by the way. I think that the changes were for the better, especially because that description of Bakugo makes him seem to be, like, too much like the standard Shonen Jump protagonist, and I think that having him be ridiculously over-the-top angry is more entertaining, and also leads to greater depth, because you can explore stuff with, you know, just an asshole hero, as opposed to he's already super nice.
Yeah. So.
Next.
All right. Again, from Jack Lebrano, says, "Dear Nick Freebird, insert just saying guitar here, solo here.
I'm free."
And Chris Larry of the Three Stooges. Why did Nick got an insane guitar solo at the end of his, and I just get called like a goober? I don't like that.
Shut up. Quiet, numbskull.
I'm writing this in hopes that Nick has at least read Stardust Crusaders at this point, in the same
good
sense...
Good timing.
Yes, in the same sense that stands represent the user's soul / fighting spirit, which Pokemon would you think either of you would have for that same position? Well, I think the idea being if... the stand part, like, kind of confuses things a little bit, but the idea being, like, if you were to have one Pokemon that would, like, represent
that represents you.
That best fits you, like, what would it be? I had a tough time figuring this one out completely, and I bounced between a couple ideas, and I eventually settled on Hitmonlee. Because I was like, it had to be a fighting type. Just period, had to be one. And that's probably the one that fits me the closest in terms of, like, glass cannon kind of thing. Like, that mentality of why I like fighting Pokemon. I'm like, they're so strong! Nothing beats fighting types! Except for psychic types, and fairy types, and flying types. Actually, they have a lot of weaknesses. For some reason, they're not going to get poison types either. I don't get it. But, yeah, I always liked Hitmonlee as a kid, and I thought he probably fit me closest out of, like, the other various fighting types.
I feel like mine would be Slaking, because I can be very lethargic at times, be very laid back, but I will fuck you up if I need to.
Okay. So. Dig it. Thank you, Jack. Good question.
Okay. Yeah. Next comes from Michael Hurt. Okay. Hey, Chris. Roloting through the sky so free as the wind because my friends and loved ones represent all of my feathers. And, oh God, more air gear references. It will never go away. It will never go away! There he is. And Nick, why am I the ruler of time? It was a better code name than Nick. Yes, you're right. It is. I've had people make jokes about that my entire life. Fuck you. Questions!
Freeman.
Come on. Yes. Number one, this one is probably not so topical, or even more frightening, way too topical, when you guys read this, but in Air Gear, instead of Emily winding up the body of a Barack Obama XP, what if she wound up in the body of Donnie Tramp?
It would be... it would become a straight porno from that point as Donald Trump keeps feeling and grabbing up his own vagina, basically.
Gonna grab my own pussy.
Like, I know Barack Obama did it in the manga. Like, he still did a moment where he's like, ooh, what are these big old jigglies? But it with Donald Trump, it'd be so
These tits are huge.
These tits are the best tits.
Nobody loves women more than I do.
These tits are fantastic. They're bringing them back. We're gonna make Japan great again because I'm Japanese now.
Gonna build a ball. Gonna make, I don't know, Thailand pay for it, I guess.
When he shows up to fucking, like, argue in front of Congress about, like, removing the sanctions of roller skates, everyone's like, that's not him. He never shows up to these. You caught me. I'm just a 15-year-old girl in his body.
Like, freaking Emily is trying to deliver the speech, and she looks over and just sees her own body is just like tweeting about something random.
She's like, "Can you at least wear longer skirts?" No. It's always as handsome. It's like, could you wear at least a shirt that doesn't stop at, like, just beneath my tits?
You, I don't tell you what to do with your body. Yes, you do. Yeah, I do. How's that working out for you?
Starts tweeting. I have a feeling a current president is not was not actually born in this country. Oh, God. Number two. Speaking of recent accomplishments, again, congrats on getting the $850 mark on your Patreon. That gives you an idea when this one was sent to us. Now that you've gotten that, could a $1,000/$1,500 mark be that Nick has to write a chapter of the World Trigger to My Heart and Backdoor fanfic that Chris has to read, or that never happened, slash require a lot more money per month to happen? I cannot match Chris's writing style. If I did it, then you could tell it would just be someone trying to imitate him.
Yeah.
I've written some fan fiction. I've written plenty of fan fiction in my day, but I have never written, what do you call it? There's a term for it.
Garbage.
No, it's a crack fic. Okay. Is what it's called. Some of it that is meant to be ridiculous on purpose, you know? So I've never written anything in that regard. Number three, since this was also brought around kind of recently, again at the point in which I tied this anyway, how would you rank the Straw Hat's backstories in terms of least favorite to favorite slash saddest?
I'm angry. I forgot my notes at work where I actually had them ranked. So I'm going to have to be going off of a little bit of memory on this one. But it definitely starts Zoro is the least.
Zoro is the least currently.
Then Luffy, Usopp. Yeah, it gets harder from here.
Okay, let's
Nami, Franky. Actually, Franky might be before Nami's. Then Sanji, Chopper, Robin, Brooke.
I don't really have any strong disagreements with that list. So, like in general, I think that your placements are right around where I would be, especially towards the bottom. I'd be like, yes, absolutely. I still personally think that the one flashback that I think may be the very saddest was in Chopper's, where Chopper realizes that he has poisoned his mentor.
It's pretty brutal.
And they're just sitting around in a cave crying.
God damn. Oda's so good at writing those.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. Solo. Oh God, that makes me tear up.
They're all very sad, except for Zoro's, which is just gonna like she fell down the stairs.
Your friend's a clumsy idiot.
How the fuck was she ever going to be a swordswoman? Seriously.
Imagine she just fell down the stairs and her dad just like turned after she hit the bomb. He's like, "That's all right. Dad reflex just didn't kick in."
There has got to be more to Zoro's backstory. There fucking better be.
I imagine in Wano we'll actually get like a full Zoro backstory, probably. And that's the next arc coming up. Again, questions here from Jonah Lev. Hello, Chris Martin from Coldplay Larios. And I'm choosing not to give Nick a name because the only pun that came to mind was Nickelback, and I feel that would be too insulting.
Oh, thank you, I guess.
First question. The main character from each series you cover in the recap disappeared. Who would be the best choice to replace them, and how would the series change because of it?
That is an interesting idea.
I would say Black Clover would change would be Noelle. I think she's the best one to kind of fit into that. And it also wouldn't be too different, because I do feel like when push comes to shove, Noelle kind of acts a lot of the same way Asta does. She would just need something.
It'd probably actually make Noelle a better character, honestly, because... it would remove the element where she's being sensed around Asta all the time.
Yeah, that would actually probably help a good deal if you got rid of that.
I think that her type of character would be more entertaining if there weren't the romantic undercurrents to the way she behaves around people.
Yeah.
Because she does act the same way in response to people, but it's stereotypical when she does it with Asta because she's attracted to him.
Yeah, because it just falls into there. I'm like, when she was doing the thing with, like, the, when she was working at the bar, and, like, every time her manager was like, are you gonna work? She's just like, shut up,
no.
Worm! Like, yeah, she
can do it.
Fairy Tail would be Urza. I feel like that's kind of like what you just, it'd be awful, but she's the best person to, like, pull in and make the lead. She's essentially the lead character as it is now in many ways, you know?
I guess you're right. I mean, I don't like her, but I guess you're right. She would just kind of fulfill the beats really well.
Yeah.
Like Gray would still be like the secondary protagonist instead of, yeah.
Yeah, Food Wars, I think I'd probably go with, actually, like, there's a lot of options for this. I think I'd go with Megumi. And if you just, like, gave her a little bit more confidence, she can fulfill that underdog kind of role that sometimes you want out of a lead character. It's tough.
Hmm.
It's, there's a lot of, like, I feel like Alice could be an option. Kurikiba could be one. But I my mind goes to Megumi just from the notion of, like, a real underdog in a school where everyone is a ridiculously good person. She's the one who's kind of, like, only in there. Nobody seems to understand why she's there, because they're like, you just don't have the nerve to be a chef in this school or anything like that. But she can... What, I get Aldini's another one who could be an option, but I
think that Megumi would work if you had her as she is now, because at the start of the series, you know, she didn't have the confidence to stand on her own. It yeah. wasn't until she had been friends with Soma for some time that she managed to get the confidence to be to realize her potential as a chef.
Yes.
Right now, I think that she'd be great because she provides that very different kind of input on, like, the determined hero, because she's like, oh god, we're all gonna get expelled! I think that Takumi, it would be easiest to fit him into that slot because, I mean, he's Soma, but he cooks Italian food. I mean,
my hero, I'd go with Todoroki. I think you put his whole, like, notion of, like, how, what does it mean to be a hero, the relationship with him and his dad, you give it more forefront. Cause Bakugo's too tough to make the main character.
Right.
Like it's really hard to, like, find any kind of sympathy with that. But with Todoroki, you can at least have, like, it's essentially like if you made the story of Avatar The Last Airbender about Zuko instead. Like, it could work. It would be a very different sort of story.
You're just saying that because they have fire powers and scars.
I'm just saying that because they seem very identical with their father issues.
And are popular with female fans.
Very moody. Eventually warm up to the main cast. Whatever. There's nothing else between them.
It's we're going to, like, get introduced to Endeavor in My Hero Academia. It's going to be Mark Hamill. It's going to be like, oh.
I'm starting to see this now.
Dante Bosco just randomly takes over the role of Todoroki.
Let's see.
He's getting very suspiciously similar now.
One Piece, I can't see anyone else but Luffy. That's a world that needs him. Kind of.
It really does.
Zoro's maybe the next closest, but Zoro wouldn't. He's not.
Zoro fits too comfortably, perfectly well into that backup role, though.
Yeah. Like, he wouldn't. He's not an instigator in leading a group or anything.
Exactly.
Like that,
he's too relaxed. Like, he takes too much of an.
Kobe would be the only other person. If you made. But then you had to completely change the story, and it's no longer about pirates.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about the Marines trying to stop pirates.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, he's
and maybe Kobe, and Kobe and Kobe learning that not all pirates are awful and
yeah.
trying to change the corrupt organization from within.
What's left after that? Promised Neverland. You could, I mean,
well, I mean, they're all main characters, and it's the same thing honestly with World Trigger. If Yuma weren't there, it would be Osamu, and if Osamu weren't there, it would be Yuma. So,
yeah, it's kind of a wash there. I guess if you were to say neither of them, I guess Jin probably is, like, I mean, he was already kind of planned to be the lead character at the start, so I guess you go with that. I just don't think it would be as interesting as a series
nah.
since he already is kind of super awesome.
Ruby.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know, the other girls?
The other three?
Junior? And second, you wake up at a mysterious mansion along with Gremi, Osamu, Ikki from Irrigar, Rebecca, Katori, Coco, and meh, why not, that one guy from Toriko who hates food. You're trapped in the house and you find a note telling you that someone in this house is the killer. Who dies and in what order? And who is the killer?
It's not Gremi. Because he is too unimaginative to come up with a scheme to murder everyone. Osamu is the one who lives. He is the protagonist who solves the mystery.
He's the chaste virgin.
Coco actually makes it to the end too, because for some reason they keep on trying to kill him just with poison.
Killer keeps injecting poison, like bleach directly into his mouth. And like the guy from the Toriko guy is like, you already tried doing that. It's not going to work. Why do you think bleach is going to kill him any more than rat poison? I hate this book. I hate this adventure.
He's the first to die, obviously. Rebecca dies second because she's not an important character, so she can't make it to the end. And then Icky dies, and then Gremmy just imagines his own death.
He's like, and, wouldn't it be cool if I... And an anvil falls in his head. It's like, you idiot!
And then it turns out that Katori is the killer, and she has to give her big speech at the end. She goes,
I'd like to think if, like, Osamu's, like, trying to, like, prove who the killer is at the end, and he's like, one, I don't know who is it, but there's one clue that tips me off. I feel like every time there was a death in the background, we saw the mysterious figure go, and she ran away.
They're like, the killer's left really ominous clues after each murder that are meant to be like, you know, an ominous poem, but they're just written.
Alright, I think we should try to wrap it up with these next couple questions then.
Yeah, let's get a move on then. Hello, Nick Weirler of Zawarudo Time, and Chris. Hello, T. I've been a fan since you first started Weekly Manga Recap, and I've been listening to you guys recap manga while I read manga. Keep up the awesome job.
Thank you.
Thank you. I know the show is called Weekly Manga Recap. I was wondering if you guys would be interested in a recommendation to do visual novels like Tsukihime, Fate's Day Night, Steins Gate, Higurashi, When They Cry, or light novels like Bakano, blah, 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 blah. For the visual novels, if there are multiple routes, you guys could choose which route to go through instead of having to read through every route, since sometimes it takes 50 plus hours to get through all of them. I'm not sure. I don't know about doing visual novels. That seems, even if you do one route, that's a lot to sit through, honestly. I've never really liked them very much. Light novels, I think it's more likely. I won't discount it right now.
Yeah.
We'll put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have read a bunch of the Haruhi light novels and I have enjoyed them, so.
More questions from Jonah Lev. Says, hello, Nick says God damn it a lot, and Chris claps his hands together when he laughs. I have three of those really annoying favorite questions for you. Thank you. Who are your favorite border squads, not counting Tamakoma 2?
Ikoma Squad is great. Arashiyama Squad is great. There's a lot of them that I really like.
Kagayura Squad. What's the female squad? Nano Squad. Yeah. Nasu squad. Kagayura. I don't remember if I said Ninomiya or not, but Ninomiya. And, yeah, Hashiara. I think those are the ones I really like all the way around. Kazu squad's pretty cool too, though. And, Tsukishima squad's great. With, fucking,
is they're all cool.
And then just an idiot goober third guy who just got in.
He's almost all of them are good. He's the Mark Wahlberg of
World Trigger. Like, a dude here, like, just like Mark Wahlberg being executive producer on Boardwalk Empire, and every time you hear him talk about it, he's like, oh, man, it's such a great show. It's about all the gangsters, and they're fighting each other, and they're shooting each other up. And it's like, you know it's not an action show, right? Like, you know it's like a political drama at points. Do you even watch it, or do you just hear it's about mobsters and assume from there? He's like, what? No. I mean, a little, yeah.
Wait, he's a producer on the show?
Yeah, he's an executive producer on Boardwalk Empire.
I don't know what it's about.
I don't know why. I don't know what he's done for the show. Every interview I've heard him in, he's like, yeah, it's got all these guys and they're just shooting each other and killing each other.
There must not be very much input from him in it then.
Yeah. What's your favorite Shokugeki and Food Wars? I really like, Megumi versus Kurokiba because it's a great fight, and also, they shoot out stands in the middle of their fight, which is
awesome.
Yeah,
it's true. That does happen. The one that they have against, oh gosh, I'm going to forget his name. The one where Megumi's academic career is on the line. That's a really good one because it's different from the rest in terms of, like, they basically lose. Mm-hmm. Like, Soma loses for the first time, really, in that one. Honestly, the most recent one we had, not that one, but, the Fall Classic Finals is also really good. I really like the build up. I like all of Soma's, Fall Classic, Shokugeki's once he enters into the finals, actually.
Yeah.
Those are all really good.
Alright, and last one here. What is your favorite rank war battle?
It's hard to choose between the most recent two.
I'd probably say, yeah, it's Tomokoma 2, OG Squad, and Nakoma Squad for me. But yeah, the last like group of them have all been really solid.
Mm.
Alright, make this the last question then?
Fair enough, okay. No signature in this one. Whatever happened to EMW Nifrin? I will actually tell you what happened to it. Before I go on to Chris's name, I lost all of my Xbox data.
Oh.
Yeah. Basically, the save file, the Xbox got turned off while I was making a change in the save data for the game, and it erased basically everything. And so there were so many different created characters that I would have had to recreate in order to get going again. So I was like, you know what? It took so much goddamn time the first time, and already I'm not doing it very much right now. So I think that's, I'm just going to give up on this, until maybe eventually revive it when I've got way more free time on my hands, because I don't have as much free time as I did when I did that. And also, please come back to the forum. I promise we're not angry. We're worried, Chris Larios. You have talked about the Oda forums since this email was sent to us, though.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't have the time to roleplay over there anymore, unfortunately. Right. I still try to go by and like check out threads and things like that, because it's beyond even the roleplaying aspect. It's just a place where a lot of like our listeners go to just talk about manga and various topics all aboard. But yeah, I don't get over there as much as I would like to. It's mostly because I hate Blockhead. I can't stand him. He's the worst. He's not in the chat right now, is he? As I look at like three messages up, it's like, hey, Chris, big fan.
Welcome to 2017. If it's not 2017 yet, this is a message from the future. These flying cars sure are great, and I have plenty of moon money stashed away for you when you arrive.
See, here's the thing. Blockhead is a like hilarious dude. On the forum, his character was Bear Crusher Balky, which was a Viking whose entire gimmick is he went around wrestling bears, and he created an entire, like, wrestling federation of all bear-based pun WWE superstars. It's like, it's something if you're like,
the bear hug! The match is going to end right here!
Well, it'd be like, and here comes, the Bundert, or like the Undbear Taker against, like, it's like Chris Bear Wah, like, so many like just awful bear puns. Like it's you gotta check it out at some point. That shit was
John Bear Cena. Oh god. Question one. Out the top of your head, what is your favorite quote made by any manga character? It could be anything from a short zinger to a World of Cardboard speech with as much or as little context as you like. I think last month we actually got a question similar to this.
Man, this probably isn't my favorite of all time, but the one that I like think to that I always love is after Yukimitsu at the end of the Ojo match helped like push Shin through, and Shin's walking away and he's like, that play was magnificent. And it's so weird, because like Shin's such a stone cold character, and he rarely ever even gives praise to like Senna, who's his main rival. Like he's always kind of shaming him. For him to like openly acknowledge how brilliant of a decision that was so cool. And just the way he phrased it to like, that play was magnificent. And it's like he coolly walks by. I was like, that's a fucking cool line. I know there's more, but that's the first one that came to mind.
I've mentioned like the Urahara quote before, when he's, teaching Ichigo, how to fight with Killing Spirit before. It's one of my favorite, moments. Question two, congratulations. You both have full creative control over the Shonen Jump mangas. Oh, no. The catch is you have to wrap them all up in 6 months or 24 chapters. How do you do it?
You don't for many of them.
Really don't. It is literally impossible for a lot of them. I think that you could probably pull it off with Promised Neverland, I think.
Yeah, Promised Neverland, you could wrap it up, they get out, and then you kind of have to like wrap things up kind of quickly. But we mentioned like this was a question before about One Piece. It was like, how do you wrap up? Like you don't. You just abruptly say One Piece has ended, like, and the adventure continues. Like you can't wrap everything up in one piece of like three admirals,
all four of the emperors are still around, like a couple members of the warlords they haven't encountered yet, all these locations and things that have never been addressed or anything like that. There's just a ton of stuff.
Yeah. So many series have gotten to the point where there is so much in motion right now that it feels like it would be impossible to do it. I think Black Clover, you could pull it off because it's such a fast-paced series that all you would really have to do is say, we're going to go after the Eye of the Midnight Sun now. Because, two of the three elites that went with Leashed have been taken out now.
You could wrap it up with that.
You could do that. You could defeat the third one, then they defeat him, and you could easily do that in 24 chapters. There would be a whole lot of ideas, I'm sure, that would be left on the drawing board, but it's not at the point where, a whole ton of stuff has been set in motion that you couldn't do it. I think that it would probably be almost impossible to do with My Hero Academia effectively. They would essentially just be like, let's go take on the League of Villains now.
I don't want to error. This one that came to me, though, for the previous question about favorite quotes by a manga character.
Oh, okay.
This is one I've enjoyed so much. I'm waiting for the day I get to use it. It's actually from, I believe it was Skippy that it happened in. And she was basically at, a young girl's birthday party. And her father was, never usually around. He finally came back and, surprised her, and he said one line to her that I always, hold as being such a powerful line. He said, thank you for being born.
Yeah.
On her birthday, and I was like, that is an amazing line, for a parent to give a child.
I remember that, yeah.
That's just such a great moment in line. So that's one I wanted to just mention before I forgot. Mm-hmm. World Trigger, I guess you just keep it on hiatus, and we never found it.
Yeah, there you go. Just ends right where it is. Do you imagine just someone kicking down Ashihara Sensei's door? Be like, you have to write manga. Why? So we can end it.
We need to abruptly end it. Otherwise, Rollo T is in full Shonen Jump control right now. And if you don't end it, he's just going to have people draw his smut fic as the ending. And it ends with the same way as Lost, where they all meet in a church. It's really weird. He's not even changing the dialogue.
Every time you talk about Lost, I'm just like, I'm glad I never watched this.
Oh man, that should be a new Patreon goal. Nick has to watch Lost.
Nick has to watch Lost. God. Alright, and third and final question. It's been 2 months since you started wrapping up the series. Seems like I made a typo in the previous question. It was supposed to be 3 months, not six. Whoops, my bad. You now have to wrap up the rest up in 4 chapters. How does this change your planning?
I'll tell you what.
Does it change Black Clover?
I'll tell you how it does. It does change some of these. And I'll tell you how they solve it. They do it the exact same way that Bleach did, where all of a sudden, he just absorbs his last remaining lieutenant for power, and, all the Diamond Kingdom generals just absorbs them for power. You do the same thing in My Hero,
It's built in.
Shirogoshi or whatever, he just absorbs all the other lieutenants or whatever.
He ends up having All For One's power, so that he can absorb their quirks.
Takes all their powers and uses it for himself, and you do the same thing with everything else. You just make them, somehow Azami from Food Wars just absorbs everyone else.
And
he just says, he slams his hand on their face. He's like, I'm taking your power. And Sakasa's like, what are you talking about? And then he never shows up again.
And the zombie just gets thrown into an insane asylum.
Chris.
And, World Trigger, you just have Chris's fanfic be drawn.
Done. We wrapped all that up very nicely. That is going to do it, guys, for the Q&A for January.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had a lot of fun here. Again, if you want to send in any questions to us, send them over to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. You can also send in your answers if you want to answer the question we posed at the beginning of the show. What manga character do you think or hope is going to have a breakout 2017? Again, send that in, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Just put answer somewhere in the question. And we'll be back in February to do another one of these. And then obviously back this week for regular episodes. So
amazingly, we managed to get through just over a month's worth of questions this time.
Yes, we're about midway, a little more than midway into October. So we are still a good ways behind, but we are catching up. So
Just make sure to keep sending your questions. Don't feel shy about it. Yes. We will get to them.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
We talk about how behind we are, but do not stop sending to us.
All right. Well, I have nothing hilarious to end this on, so...
Absolutely nothing.
Snuffleupagus was originally invisible to everybody.
Yeah. They had to have Elmo, hold onto his trunk, which somehow actually did stop him in his tracks. This giant furry elephant just swinging a tiny, tiny red Muppet around managed to stop him in time for all the adults to come see.
Yeah, and they had to make him visible to everybody because they worried that it would make children embarrassed to tell their parents about something like child abuse or...
Child molestation
or something like that. So,
yeah, that's having
a somewhat sad but interesting fact I decided to just leave this podcast in a dead stop with. Goodbye, everybody.
Yep.